Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One.
Corolla Drinks fans, 818 Rye Whiskey is available now at CorollaDrinks.com. 818 is a whiskey from Adam's backyard, not the gated communities in the same area code. It's aged 3 years in new American oak and couples a malty sweetness with a complex rye finish. Adam and the team made this whiskey for fans of the show. They made this whiskey for the regulars. Get your bottle of 818 Rye at CorollaDrinks.com. Hurry, we will sell out.
All right, in the first half, we get into some of the George Floyd trial. We get into that shooting with the 16-year-old and the knife and the legalities of that. Harmeet Dhillon joins us, talks about James O'Keefe and Project Veritas suing Twitter. First, I'll tell you about LifeLock, the joy of tax season. Oh, pulling out the old receipts, filling out endless forms, trying to get it all submitted by the deadline. The only thing that could make the process worse is if identity thieves got a hold of your tax form with all your personal information on it. When you do your taxes, your personal info is all in one place, getting emailed, shared, possibly exposed to identity thieves. LifeLock monitors, uses your personal info, alerts to possible suspicious activity. If you become a victim of identity theft, a dedicated U.S.-based specialist will work to fix it. Protect yourself with LifeLock. Right, Gary?
That's absolutely right. No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock helps you keep what's yours. Join today by going to LifeLock.com/doubt to save up to 25% off your first year. That's LifeLock.com/DOUBT to save 25% off your first year.
This is Corolla Digital. This is Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on a choice. We've got a mandate. Get it on. Welcome to the best hour or so in the universe. It's Reasonable Doubt. I'm Adam Carolla. It's Mark Garagus in New York City.
Right. Gary caught me doing a double to celebrate my daughter's 30th birthday today. Isn't that amazing that I've got a 30-year-old force of nature who I just toasted and said, Tenny, I didn't even know what life was like before you. So great day for me.
Yeah. I feel like my life before Tenny was pretty good, actually. I'm trying to think.
Well, how about you? And then you got to think, I don't know.
Nah, you're right. No, you're right, because I would have been living in a rented house in La Crescenta with three dudes and driving a Zuzu Trooper and making $20 a boxing class. So not good before 10E. So I think right. She's got both of us.
All right. By the way, when this drops tomorrow, I'm going to make a prediction. I think President Biden is, for the first time, although Ronald Reagan made a reference to it, I think for the first time he's going to proclaim the Armenian genocide a genocide, a U.S. president, which this drops on April 24th, is the 106th anniversary of the commemoration. So quite a weekend to in the Armo Garagus household.
Well, if you guys want to take a ethnic cleansing and upgrade it to genocide, far be it from me to interfere. You know what I mean, Mark? Let's just agree to disagree. That's all. I've studied the subject well. All right. So first up,
what legal issue today piques the Corolla consciousness?
Well, I talked to Gary on the ride in, as I always do, and he was talking about that shooting of the 16-year-old gal who was wielding the knife. There's a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking going on with the news pundits about, well, first off, they all have this crazy, their ideas range from why didn't the cop shoot a warning shot in the air to there was plenty of knife fights when I was growing up. You know, the kids just kind of settled them themselves to lots of crazy tweets. I don't know if you could typify it as a knife fight. It was somebody who had a knife and someone who was going to be stabbed. I think the cop had less than 10 seconds from the time he got out of the car to the time he fired the shots. you know, nobody likes the optics of a 16-year-old being shot. On the other hand, in under 10 seconds, I don't think the cop knows the age of the person, and I don't think they have a lot of time to figure out non-lethal forces or have your partner intervene or, you know, throw the baton at her feet and trip her. I mean, she pulled the knife back and was pretty much going to stab this person and had announced, "I shall stab this person," beforehand. So in terms of the cop, I'm not sure what the options were. Do you have thoughts?
I don't know what to make of this. I really don't, because the way it was first reported, the way it unfolded, you hit on like three or four things that were interesting too. The why four shots, why, you know, the one about the knife fights I was chuckling about, because back when you and I were in high school, you could carry knives. You know, people forget that. And most people did carry knives. Didn't you carry a knife in high school?
No, but we were just probably too poor. Maybe my dad gave me a spork from Kentucky Fried Chicken to bring with me for safety.
We had those knives that you used to get. We used to get them down at Alvero Street. Remember those ones that you could flick open? And everybody had a knife. I mean, the knives were so, you know, I talked with you before. We used to go over on to that construction area, and we used to have rock fights, rock wars.
Rock wars
were huge. I mean, you throw, you know, giant, I mean, rocks, not dirt clods. We used to do rock fights and the whole thing.
I know. And the difference between a stiletto and a stiletto and a what knife? What was the knife that everyone
had? I know which one you're talking about. Look, there was
butterfly?
Butterfly. But no, that is a good one. A switchblade and a stiletto.
Switchblade, exactly. And it was a different time. I mean, I posted a picture on Twitter this week. I don't know if Gary's got it, of my Uncle Bob holding me. I'm probably about one or one and a half, reaching for a cigarette that my grandfather is trying to hand me, with my cousin Glenn on my Uncle Bob's lap, who's holding a gun. And that was 1959. I mean, nowadays, can you imagine if I'm holding the grandkids or the nieces and nephews while I'm trying to hand them a cigarette while the other one has got a gun, what would happen to you? It's just we've come a long way.
Yeah, it's like right up there with sitting on your dad's lap while he drove an Oldsmobile around the neighborhood.
Yeah, there you go. There's me reaching for the ciggy at a very tender age. And you like Glenn handling the gun right there?
Yeah.
Right. And Uncle Bob looks, you know, he looks very content. Rest in peace. He just passed away I think he was 93 years old. Armo males, we tend to live into our 90s as long as Ottoman Turks aren't slaughtering us in the desert.
Yeah, it still feels like longer. But yeah, I get what you're saying. So, I mean, to Whitey.
I know.
So what's your take on that shooting? Did you see both videotapes?
I've seen both videotapes. I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. I wish I could have an opinion.
Legally, what do you think of it?
Legally, I think that they're not going to charge the officer. George Floyd universe, never in a million years would this officer get charged. You know, it's interesting. Somebody posted the other day, the Minneapolis Police Department, after the verdicts, the Minneapolis Police Department's statement immediately after George Floyd. Gary, I should have told you to find this. It's astonishing what the police would have had you believe happened in the immediate aftermath. And that's generally the law enforcement kind of solution to things. So much of this that we're going through right now, which you and I have talked about for years, and is the system is just geared. I mean, look what we're going through either in Philadelphia, they just did a thing about Larry Krasner on some series, I think that's on PBS, all of the stuff that's going on about Gascon. Anytime you try and reimagine the criminal justice system, people just go bonkers. They just get, they don't understand how you could reimagine it. You know, you say the buzzwords, defund the police, and it's like, who are you going to call if there's an emergency? You know, I mean, all of this idea, we've been so ingrained, especially in California, because we kind of pioneered along with the, you know, the back in the Clinton days of heavy duty incarceration and mass incarceration. We pioneered that in California. I mean, we were way ahead of the curve of throwing away the key on everybody. I mean, I remember for maybe 10, 15 years, virtually every single jury trial I did, no matter what the case was a life top case. So you were trying, everything was punishable by life. I mean, it either had a strike prior or it was an assault that called for life sentence. And, you know, guys were, I remember growing up when the old man, when Pops was prosecuting murders, and a second degree murder was 5 to 7 years. And then, you know, next thing you know, a second degree murder in California, at least, is you can go away with the use of a gun for the rest of your natural life. You see, they're talking about Chauvin for the rest of his natural life. The pendulum has swung so far in one direction. At some point, it's going to have to come back. And I think it is coming back, but people are going to have to kind of, I think, step aside and say what we have been doing has not worked. That's clear. So maybe there is a different solution. I mean, the locking up, I can invoke my father again. He used to say, you want to solve the crime problem, he just says, incarcerate all males, the ages of 16 through 25, and you'll see a massive drop in crime, because that's what, you know, who commits almost all the crime. And it's true. Then I saw yesterday the U.S. Supreme Court with a Kavanaugh opinion. People were lambasting him because he had written an opinion that said that it was not basically cruel and unusual to have minors sentenced to life, because there's been a movement to stop kind of giving these crazy sentences to trying minors as adults. People were saying, oh yeah, the Kavanaugh, you know, he was doing this, that, or the other in high school, but now he doesn't want kids to get the benefit of the doubt. I had a different take on it. I said the facts of that case were a kid who killed his grandpa, and you got a bunch of grandpas on the Supreme Court, that you're not going to win a lot of sympathy from a lot of grandpas for a guy factually who's convicted of killing his grandpa.
Well, as I think about the Chauvin verdict, it seems like, you know, the manslaughter seemed pretty doable, but it seems like the murder two and the murder three seemed bizarre to me. I mean, the definition, I think the definition of murder three is that, you know, basically firing into a crowd, kind of depraved heart thing. That seemed like a weird one to make stick on the, by the definition of murder three. Is there something we're missing from that?
Now, I think that it was so important and why they wanted that, because, and it's interesting because I saw not one of the deliberating jurors, but an interview with an alternate juror. And sure enough, that juror talked about, and mind you, maybe she was alone at being an alternate and it didn't seep its way into the jury deliberation room. I doubt it, because I thought at the time that gave them the ability, the prosecution, to bring in how people felt, because the argument is, well, these are all people that are part of the crowd, and what he was doing was, what Chauvin was doing was affecting the people in the crowd, which will help us circumstantially find his mental state. And the reason that's so dangerous is because, as the juror said, she was haunted by the comments of the people in the crowd. And that's like I said all along on this case, it's a dangerous, slippery slope of evidence when you don't like, I understand when you don't like the defendant, you want to see this come in. But if it's a relative of yours who you want to see get a fair shake, you might think twice about this kind of evidence coming in and this kind of charging. Also, by the way, everybody, myself included, who's been complaining about prosecutorial overreach for decades, part of what I always complain about is the prosecution overcharging. And why do they overcharge? They overcharge because then you don't want to take the risk of going to trial, losing and getting hammered. And sure enough, that can come back to haunt you. So when you're cheerleading for the process because you don't like who it's aimed at, remember, next time around, it can be aimed at somebody that you do like or somebody that you do love. And that it's a dangerous path to be on.
Well, like I said, Depraved Heart, Murder 3 is throwing a cinder block off a freeway overpass and not really caring whose car it hits. Is that like that definition?
I think it's fair. I've also argued, and we mentioned this just briefly, and I'm glad you brought it up. I've argued for years in California that the jury instruction for what's called an implied malice second degree murder, which is kind of the first cousin of the Minnesota statute, has very, in some ways, the jury instruction, I think, is easier for a jury to find somebody guilty on a second degree implied malice than it is on an involuntary manslaughter, which makes no sense because, you know, the whole idea of the difference between murder and manslaughter is when we're discussing this in the criminal law, what we're saying is there are certain things that we don't want to countenance as a society. And that's malice, having malice and committing homicide. That's the definition of murder. We give as a society a excuse or a downgrade for manslaughter, both the punishment and the mental state. And we say with manslaughter, there are reasons that may not excuse the killing, but we recognize that there are certain areas that we are going to make allowances for why you acted the way you did. And when you start collapsing those, then that's also dangerous because if you're ever in a situation where you want to use force to defend yourself or in your house or in a fight or something, somebody attacks you, then sometimes if you don't have those distinctions, it's a very tough nut to crack in terms of how you're going to punish people who may have a better excuse than others who commit cold blood, what's commonly called cold-blooded murder.
Do you think they're going to be pressured into trying to bring up the officer who shot the 16-year-old with the knife on charges?
I think so. I think that somebody, I mean, in this milieu, I think that there is a compelling argument that four shots was excessive. I think that a prosecutor would be more inclined to file than they wouldn't have 2 years ago. I think that you're going to see also, I saw today where the feds are now looking at Chauvin for a 2017 excessive use of force. They may just indict him on that too. They've got the grand jury already kind of primed and ready to go. There's a lot of, it's about time that there was a reckoning. I just think we need to imagine or reimagine at the same time that we're having a reckoning, how we're going to deal with crime and how we treat crime.
What about Harmeet Dhillon is going to join us? She's an attorney who's represented. She's been on the show before. She's represented many people, and she's currently representing James O'Keefe from Project Veritas. It has to do with Twitter suspending his account, and we'll get into that.
Gary, did we get her?
She's landed.
She's on a plane.
She has landed. She is trying to get to get her bags and get into an Uber so we get the best sound quality possible. So probably about 15, 20 minutes from now, she'll join us.
But where is, like, all right, so you take this officer. He shoots the woman who has the knife, and then LeBron James basically sends out a picture of him and says, "You're next." to, you know, 50 million followers. Does he have liability, or is he opened himself up with some legal exposure for the cop saying, you put me in danger? Or do we have to wait and see if somebody actually makes an attempt on him, on the officer, or, you know, puts pig's blood on the outside of the house?
Depending on the jurisdiction that the officer is in, and I haven't researched it, I can see where there could be an action, and it would be interesting to see what the courts would do with it, for a negligent infliction of emotional distress. But, you know, it's a very fine line. You know, the First Amendment protects speech you don't like, and that's the whole purpose of it. And so I'm not so sure that would be actionable. But having said that, I'm also not sure that somebody wouldn't file that case. I mean, anybody with, you know, in California, $435, or I think they just raised it, filing fee, can file any case. That doesn't mean you're going to survive a demur or you're going to survive summary judgment. But I'm sure there's some intrepid lawyer who would make that argument. I had said yesterday that that I give LeBron a pass just because I know he's so passionate on these subjects. And somebody tweeted at me, "I wish Adam was there to hold you accountable," as if I've got to be held accountable by Adam. So when I say I give LeBron a pass, I was saying in the sense that he's somebody who walks the walk and talks the talk, and he's engaged in people, and it's a passionate kind of area. Obviously,
yeah, I get it. Like, I mean, I feel, look, this is like saying I'm passionate about drunk driving and drunk driving accidents, but sometimes someone jumps a curb when they're texting and runs over an old lady and they're not drunk. And in that particular instance, keep walking, LeBron. Go find a case of a drunk driver. I get, like, you're for motorist safety, you're for pedestrian safety. Sometimes somebody gets killed by a car and it's not that. You don't have to stuff everything into that jello mold. That's what I'm saying. Be passionate about your passions. I'm all for it. And I feel the same way about the news. Be passionate about it, and the politicians. Be passionate about, but don't try to steer everything into that template. Sometimes it doesn't fit.
Right.
And I think you hurt your own cause when you try to steer. You know, there's bad cop shootings, there's good cop shootings, and then there's just shit that falls under the heading of shit happens. It's just, we live in a society, it's got teenagers with knives, it's got cops with guns, it's got split seconds, and people are flawed and they make mistakes. I don't believe everything has to be seen through the lens of a racist cop. That's basically my take on it.
And I applaud, at the same time that you may say, okay, LeBron did this and condemn him for that, he also posted something almost immediately saying, you know, I'm learning and I'm trying to recalibrate and whatever else. By the way, that in the, you know, there was a different era where you could have a discussion with somebody and somebody could say, you know what, that's a good point, I'm going to change my mind or I'm going to rethink it. I, you know, that to me is, I invoke our mutual friend, Dr. Drew. That's the beauty of liberal arts education, we used to say, is you would have critical thinking discussion and you could change your mind or you could modulate the way you're thinking.
Well, I agree. So the cop could file a lawsuit, and in a way, it's not that different from Nicholas Sandman doing his lawsuit against CNN, sort of saying, you slandered my reputation with your followers. But,
well, I'll tell you, you know, the one which I thought of you, and I thought of that because you talk about that channel. What is it for? NBC News with Lester Holt had done a little, at least arguable, manipulation of the video and then had to clean it up because they were called out on it. And so that is exactly kind of your fit right into your kind of theme that you keep coming back to.
Yeah, I think what they did is they whacked up the 911 call. So they always, they'll take the what they did with the Trayvon Martin thing is they whacked up the 911 call. So they had Zimmerman said he's black, but they cut out the part where the operator said, what's his ethnicity? So, of course, if somebody says, what's his ethnicity, and you say he's black, that's different than you just volunteering he's black. And if you whack it out, then there's a contextual issue, which is going on all the time, obviously.
Which, by the way, that Utah case where we've played the tape before, the 911 caller there, I believe, is at least sounds to have maybe joined with me in some Don Julio 1942 at some point. And is talking about the Mexican walking down the street who ends up getting basically assassinated by the cop. And as you say, that's different than asking for a description and somebody answering the questions. And by the way, why do you need to shade things? To just put the facts out there. It's kind of, it's what I always say about opponents in a courtroom. Why do you leave some of the facts for me to bring out as opposed to preempt it, under direct, for instance? Why leave it to cross and make it look like you're hiding or shading something?
Well, I would argue they have an agenda almost like they do in the courtroom. But so let me just drill down for a second here. LeBron puts the tweet out. Maybe LeBron walks it back. Nothing happens. What if somebody attacks the officer and says it's because I read the LeBron tweet? Does that then turn it into a lawsuit, or does that not change things?
I don't think it would change things. It's very difficult. And I think one of the reasons, for instance, that you haven't seen so far any prosecutions of Hawley or Senator Cruz or Trump or Giuliani. It's very hard when you're talking about in a free speech context, in a arguably core free speech context, because this is an issue that is core political speech. Very hard to then separate out what is rhetoric, hyperbole, and causal relationships. In fact, I've seen a couple of things recently where that's going back and forth in the law, and it'll be interesting to see whether or not how the courts decide it. There's a case kind of percolating right now that may make its way up to the Court of Appeal, and we'll see if that how they rule on that. It's not a defined area of the law in terms of where you can just say black and white. I mean, it's evolving. Speech is something that we should cherish and protect, but the First Amendment really needs some bolstering, and I'm hoping at some point the U.S. Supreme Court does that. I mean, they haven't been afraid to speak on the areas of religion this year, and I'm hoping they do some more speaking on the other clauses of the First Amendment.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what Harmeet has to say about that.
I'm very anxious to see what Harmeet has to say. When Gary should have sent somebody to pick up her clothes at the bags at the carousel.
All right. Well, hopefully she'll be joining us soon. First, let me tell you about our friends at AsteraLabs.com. This podcast is sponsored by our friends at Astera Labs. Thought about trying CBD? Sure, but what brand or what dosage form is best? Astera Labs, easy to swallow tablets that provide consistent dosing and blister packaging that allows for convenient transport. Manufactured according to the FDA's current good manufacturing practices in a facility that is GMP compliant and tested by a third-party lab to ensure compliance. Astera Labs only uses pharmaceutical-grade ingredients on their tablets. Zero THC and made in the USA. And their unscented body cream has aloe, sunflower oil, and shea butter to protect and moisturize the skin. So let's get with Astera Labs. Right, Gary?
Try Astera Labs safe quality CBD products by shopping at AsteraLabs.com. That's AsteraLabs.com. And use code RD20 to receive 20% off your order today.
All right. So Harmeet Dhillon, she's, I guess I would call her civil rights attorney now, is used to be the civil rights attorneys were on one side of the aisle. Now I think it's open to many political persuasions. I think Gary has that declaration made by the Minneapolis Police Department that you referenced at the top of the show.
I do. Would you guys like to see it, or would you like me to read it? I'm not sure. It's.
I'd like to see it and have you read it. How's that?
That's great. I'm going to put it up right now, and then I will read it for you guys. It's headline, Man Dies After Medical Incident During Police Interaction, May 25th, 2020, Minneapolis.
On Monday. Oh, wait. That's what they... That was their initial.
This is the night of the death.
The night. Oh, I thought it was the night of the trial.
No, nope, this is the original statement from the day of the interaction. May 25th, 2020, Minneapolis. On Monday evening, shortly after 8 p.m., officers from the Minnesota Police Department responded to the 3700 block of Chicago Avenue South on a report of a forgery in process. Officer,
wait, can we just stop for 1 second?
Sure.
A forgery in progress. They make it seem like the guy, like Floyd, is in there or the suspect is in there. He's forging checks as we got to stop him from forging checks. Anyway, yeah. Go on.
You shut your mic, Gary.
Sorry about that. Officers were advised that the suspect was sitting on top of a blue car and appeared to be under the influence. Two officers arrived and located the suspect, a male believed to be in his 40s, in his car. He was ordered to step from his car. After he got out, he physically resisted officers. Officers were able to get the suspect into handcuffs and noted he appeared to be suffering from medical distress. Officers called for an ambulance. He was transported to Hennepin County Medical Center by ambulance, where he died a short time later. At no time were weapons of any type used by anyone involved in the incident. The Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension has been called to investigate the incident at the request of the Minneapolis Police Department. No officers were injured in the incident. Body-worn cameras were on and activated during this incident. The GO number associated with this case is yada yada.
Well, now, you know what? Yeah. What are you going to say? Because I'm going to tell you what do you take a look at that and lionize the chief of police in Minnesota? I mean, that was his department. He was the chief. That's the bullshit they put out.
Well, look, everyone's an advocate for whatever side they're on. And anyone who's ever been in an argument with a woman knows that this is that you pick a side and then you make that argument.
Your brain needs to be put in the Smithsonian. It's the crystal brain.
Now, it sounds insane once you see it, but if you don't, everyone just becomes an advocate. You know, I was thinking about the filming of all these, you know, the fact that all these events are being now chronicled with body cams and Ring doorbell cams and cell phones and everything else. And it strikes me that the George Floyd case, they would have never gotten a conviction minus all the video. For sure.
Ever. They would have discounted. I've got a case in Los Angeles right now that they said was an appropriate use of force. It was investigated, an appropriate use of force. They blew my client's face off with a gunshot. Miraculously, he lived. Every witness who was negative was discounted. There was no video. The camera wasn't on. The guy had no weapon. They claimed he was waving a towel and that they thought that was a weapon. It would have gone. It's exactly what they do. This is it's like they come from they have a script and it comes from central casting.
Yeah. On the other hand, it's a good thing there's video footage of the officer shooting the 16-year-old suspect with the knife in her hand, because that could have got spun the other direction minus any. That could have been she was too far away from her. He had time to use less than lethal, whatever. Depending on what people around there said, that thing minus the footage could have been used against the officer, I believe. In this day and age, you got a 16-year-old black girl shot four times in the back, And, you know, she's holding a knife. Who knows what she was intending on doing with it? It would have worked against the officer, I believe.
I have seen it cut every single way. I mean, it seems like when it ends up in my office, it tends to, because people seek us out for particular remedies, but it seems like, you know, no, it didn't happen this way. Canvas the area and find some still cameras. You know, we live in a society now that you can find cameras virtually on every corner. And so it's very difficult for people to make up stories and not have some kind of video documentation of it. And you're right. It can cut both ways.
What's going on with Tinhorn Flats? Do you have an update?
We just filed a motion to dissolve the preliminary injunction and to hold the city of Burbank and to sanction the city of Burbank for violating the court order. We've got a court date, but I'm going to have to advance that. And my understanding, I don't know if he wants me to say it yet, but my understanding is that Barrett LePegin, your classmate, has got a solution that he will be unveiling, and I'll wait for him to tell you or me on one of our next episodes, maybe during the week. I don't want to steal his thunder, but I will tell you that basically the argument was, for those who don't understand it, that there's never been a legal determination as to whether the county's revocation of the health permit was authorized or legal in the first place. The county punted on that, even though they had two lawyers present at the hearing. We've asked for a hearing on that. You have to exhaust your administrative remedies. That's what we're waiting for. Hopefully we get a hearing in the next 4 weeks. But everything that Burbank did after that is just a parade of illegal horribles. And, you know, and there's people fighting with phony Tinhorn Flats social media accounts and they're doing the usual nonsense. But the fact remains that I think the city of Burbank has painted themselves into a corner. I don't know what their exit strategy is, but sure seems to me like if I were to have to pick a side, I would pick Barrett LePegin's. I would not pick city of Burbank.
Right. But again, there's never any consequence. So they just kind of go for it every time, waste a bunch of taxpayer money, waste a bunch of time, especially of the business owner, or the homeowner, or whoever they're aiming, you know, whoever they have in their crosshairs. And then if they lose, they lose. Nothing matters. It always reminded me when I got my ticket in the city of Burbank for crossing in the crosswalk. In the crosswalk while the light was blinking and just walking the other side. And I said, I'm going to fight it. And the cop said, yeah, go ahead and fight it. Who cares? And then, you know, go down to the courtroom and then you make you pay in full. And then you go argue with them to get your money back. And then you set a court date and then you waste 2 or 3 days of work. And at the end, they go, well, you won because the cop didn't show up. And I go, won what?
Yeah.
What did I win? I missed 3 days of work. What did I win? I was not compensated at all. All I did was get my $118 back.
I've got some news that's a win. You've got Harmeet Dhillon on line one.
Harmeet Dhillon line one. Harmeet?
Yes, hi. How are you guys?
Hi. Thanks for joining us. I know you just landed and you jumped into an Uber, and so we appreciate you jumping on here.
Harmeet, I wore your bright blue beanie that you knitted me this morning, and it kept me warm, and I thank you.
Oh, that's great.
I wore the cod piece you knitted me earlier in the year as well.
All right, now, fake news.
So, James O'Keefe, he's the founder of Project Veritas. I heard him speaking on Hannity a couple of days back. You're representing him. You guys are going after Twitter for suspending his account. Can you give us some of the nuts and bolts?
Sure, absolutely. Well, Twitter has suspended James and Project Veritas previously, but then they unsuspended James. And so they recently, after Twitter, didn't like the fact that James did a very hard-hitting multi-day expose through Project Veritas of the bias that the CNN executives have exhibited behind the scenes against conservatives, you know, in political sense as well as in cultural senses, they decided to make up a reason to get rid of him from their platform. And one of the reasons that their platform terms of service gives to deplatform somebody permanently is if they use multiple accounts. And so Twitter put out a statement to the media saying after they suspended James permanently, but without giving him a reason, they told the press they suspended him for using fake accounts and for then using them to manipulate conversations on the platform and amplify those. And James did not do that. That is a false statement of material fact. And it is a damaging statement to somebody whose career is as a journalist, somebody who is very careful to have the highest integrity. And it's a lie. And so we went to court and we sued on that specific statement that Twitter said that was not true. And so under the law of defamation, that's defamation per se. It is making a statement of material fact about somebody that affects their career and that would impact their reputation to any reasonable observer. And so we'll see how it goes. We served the company this week. And I think you should watch the pages of the legal press because there may be other lawsuits as well coming up soon.
Is he also suing the New York Times?
He is also suing the New York Times. I don't have the privilege of representing him in that case, but in the New York Times case, he has sued them for false statements of material fact that were made about Project Veritas's a couple of different investigations that they did, which Project Veritas's lawyers wrote to the New York Times in advance and corrected them during the fact-checking process, and they put out these false claims anyway. And in that case, Project Veritas has survived the New York Times' motion to dismiss. That's a huge, huge step. The press almost always wins in this country, and so I know the client is excited about the discovery process coming up in that case. Hey, that's also in New York.
Can I ask you and Mark just a more global question about Twitter and a lot of these tech platforms? It's clear to people like me and Harmeet that they're left-leaning. They're essentially, I always say it, it's like you go to a liquor store and you get shortchanged every time and they go, yeah, I know the cash register's broken. And I always go, no, if it's broken, then I get more change some of the time and then less change some of the time. But it's not always shortchanged. So it's always, you know, the Hunter Biden story and the laptop and that's off. And then later on they go, oh yeah, we made a mistake. We shouldn't have done that. But it's clear that they have an agenda now. Now, I don't know if they just want to announce they have an agenda and say we're a private company, we're allowed to have an agenda and get on with our lives, or maybe they're worried about Congress at that point in Washington. But big picture, what do you guys think? Should they just step back and sort of own it and go, yeah, here's how we lean? Or should they try to clean it up and really step back and just go, this is an open forum, right, left, center, that's how we're going to conduct ourselves?
Well, so I'll take this first. I've actually sued Twitter for another client who was a feminist, who was critical of a transgender activist and misgendered that person on the platform. That wasn't a basis for getting rid of people on the platform, but they did it anyway. So it isn't just an anti-conservative bias, Adam. It is a bias against whatever the woke orthodoxy is, including right, against feminists who are critical of, you know, guys in the locker room, if you will. And so that bias is there. I lost that case. The California court said that Communications Decency Act Section 230 is basically an absolute bar from anybody holding them liable for their own terms of service. And so, you know, what that means is Twitter's contracts with you as a user are meaningless, and that's what Twitter argued in court. That's kind of shocking. But until Congress acts, I don't think we're going to be able to remedy that specific issue. I don't think 230 immunizes Twitter or other companies from, you know, actual defamation that doesn't have to do with conduct on the platform itself. But I think, yes, I would be fine with a universe where we had multiple social media platforms, where we had true competition, everybody knew what the score was and you could pick and choose. But what has happened instead is these companies are huge. They have effectively a form of, I think, subsidy by this Communications Decency Act 230 that has allowed them to swallow up and compete with newspapers and other independent publications to the detriment of the quality of news in this country. And there is no antitrust enforcement. There was no antitrust enforcement on this under Trump. There wasn't before that. There isn't likely to be under the Biden administration. And so you won't have a choice. And when a choice did come up, the Parler platform, I don't know whether you like it or use it or not, but it was sort of more conservative and more open. What happened was the big tech companies that actually host the data, Amazon, AWS, IBM, they shut down these platforms. So there's really nowhere safe where one could even put up an alternative platform right now. And I do think that our government needs to act in this regard. Otherwise, we will slowly be seeing fewer and fewer voices on any of our social media.
Mark, how say you?
The idea of the kind of preaching to the choir, as I think anybody who knows me knows, I'm not into. I like a free, raucous exchange of ideas. I don't understand. I guess, you know, it's one of the reasons I can't watch Fox. I can't watch CNN. I can't, you know, I have trouble with MSNBC. I don't want to hear the slanted. I mean, I guess I do, but it would be nice sometimes to have voices that were actually talking to each other in a civil discourse fashion and exchanging ideas and watching people say, hey, I hadn't thought of it that way. And then maybe, you know, changing whatever they're doing. I'm very leery of this idea of, and I've always been, of censoring speech. I just think it's a dangerous.
Harmy, let me try this one out on you because we're all human and this is run by humans. And so what I'm basically saying is I don't know if there's a decree from the top. I just know when I did Ellen's show a million years ago, Ellen is a vegan. And when I was in the green room, one of the segment producers came up to me and said, you're not going to talk about meat, are you? And I said, I hadn't planned on it. And she said, good, please don't bring up meat. And I thought, well, if you bring it up again, I'm definitely going to bring it up. But no. And then I realized the person was scared. Now, what happened? Well, that person's not a vegan, but Ellen's a vegan. And they know who sort of rules the roost over there. And so the folks who work for Ellen, it just kind of trickles down. I don't know if there's an actual decree that says no talking about meat, or if you're there for 6 or 7 years, you kind of get which way the wind is blowing. So I don't know with a lot of these big tech platforms, you know, they're against, you know, they're all woke, no joke. The point is there an actual decree, or does everyone who worked there just sort of get it?
Yeah, so great question, and I'm speculating here, of course, but only partially. So there's a combination of factors. So for many years, look, all these companies are based in the Bay Area. My hometown of San Francisco is where Twitter has been based. Who lives in San Francisco, and who can afford to live in Palo Alto? You know, like 20-something people making $250,000 a year who love, you know, avocado toast and wear those, you know, Japanese selvedge jeans. You know, they're a certain prototype. They're all liberals. They're not conservatives. And they are willing to overlook the crap on the streets and all of that for their, you know, fancy restaurants and their surfing or what have you. And so they have their inbound, you know, ingrained prejudices. That's part of it. And their algorithms are written as such, and they make their judgment calls as such. But layered on top of that is the 2020 election. The 2020 election included specific policies in these companies that they cooperated amongst themselves. I mean, there's evidence that these companies communicated between Facebook, Twitter, and Google to tamp down so-called false information about the election, which included questioning the results of the election. And they bragged about that afterwards. So I do think that there was a top-down aspect to much of the censorship that we've seen in the last several months. They're proud of it. I can guarantee you that the decision to remove President Trump from the platform was very much a decision made at the top at Twitter. And the general counsel of Twitter has bragged about, you know, her work on the election stuff and keeping the platform, quote unquote, safe. So, you know, they are a partisan organization. And as a partisan organization, I would argue that the Federal Election Commission ought to take a look at that and check out whether these companies are, in fact, giving a political assist that's a in-kind contribution to certain political candidates. I mean, there's no accident that Marjorie Taylor Greene, who the libs hate, has been deplatformed from Twitter twice, and then they apologize and put her back. But the timing of it is always right after she's being attacked on the floor of the House, or, you know, right after she's introduced a bill and then she can't use the platform to promote it. That's no accident, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, look no further than, was it the Washington Times with the Hunter Biden story?
Post.
New York Post.
Oh, sorry, the New York Post. Right. I mean, they said, you know, it violated their standards, blah, blah, blah. That was just blatant, a running interference for Biden that close to the election as you could illustrate. And it is an interesting philosophical question, which is, if it does turn out that they have a bias, what is that worth to any candidate? I would argue quite a bit more than a small contribution. And then at some point you're going to have to regulate it, right?
Well, I hate regulation as a small C conservative, but when you have corporations that literally have more power than the government, you have a huge problem right now. You can see that the Biden administration is asking social media companies and news media to promote their policies on vaccination, for example. Some of those policies are controversial, and I think there are a lot of legitimate questions people have. I've chosen to get vaccinated, but when you have the government asking private corporations to help enforce their policies, what does that tell you? That tells you that those corporations, which are multinational and which have a lot of users outside our country, are calling the shots. This is concerning whether you're from the right or from the left. I think I'd be equally concerned if I saw that happening in a conservative administration.
So just to bring it home, what's the timeline like for the O'Keefe situation, and what do you think of your chances?
Well, we like our chances. We've pled a very simple case. It isn't complicated. Twitter told a lie about our client, and we want that lie to be corrected, and we want compensation for the damages that have occurred. There's no specific dollar amount pled in the complaint. This is a defamation per se case. Twitter has been served. They have 3 weeks approximately to respond. That often gets negotiated out further. I am sure they're going to respond strongly with, you know, great lawyers, and then we'll fight it out in court and see what the New York Superior Court says about it.
Do you have any thoughts about the LeBron James tweet with the picture of the officer that shot the woman with the knife in her hand saying, "You're next"? Is there any any legal avenue for the officer on that?
Well, I mean, you know, Twitter has all these rules, Communications Decency Act 230 and so forth. I suppose the officer could try to file a suit against LeBron James, but the law there, I'm sure Mark would agree, is that a true threat? Is that really a threat that would put a person in fear of their lives, that would get you a restraining order in a court? I don't think so. I think that's rhetoric. I think it's grossly irresponsible. And I think it's, you know, as many people have pointed out on Twitter, LeBron James doesn't say anything about when Muslims are having their organs harvested or being killed or put into concentration camps in China, where he makes shoes and play, you know, where his, you know,
Harmy more articulately said exactly what I said. I mean, you know, you could see somebody suing for negligent infliction of emotional distress, but it probably would never survive a demur.
Yeah. Well, I'm not pushing for it. I just wanted it, as long as we had Harmeet on the blower, and I realized I teased that question, I should be a good.
Oh, she. I'm glad to hear that we agree, Harmeet.
Great minds. Harmeet Dillon.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let me give you a tweet. The law firm Dillon. It's DHILLON Law Group Incorporated, and website DillonLaw.com as well. Good to catch up with you, Harmeet.
Harmeet, I'll call you later. I miss you.
Thanks a lot. Bye, guys.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, she's good, that one.
Oh, she's tremendous. Tremendous.
And, yeah, very measured. Very, I like we always talk about, I like folks that are measured, responsible, and also I like the ones that say, even if they disagree with the person, that's kind of how you know somebody has integrity. I'm sure Harmeet Dhillon hates LeBron James more than almost than a Cleveland fan, but she still is has enough integrity and is reasonable enough in also sort of has a reverence for her profession, which is attorney, to say, nah, there's nothing. There's no there.
Well, that's I always will say, and one of the reasons I adore her is that she's smart. She cares about the law. She follows, not so much adheres to the law, but is interested in the law and has a reverence for it. And if you're a lawyer and you don't, I don't know why you would ever be in the profession. If you're not interested in which way Supreme Court trends are going, things of that nature, then I don't understand what you're doing. There's a thousand other things you could be doing than practicing law.
Well, last question for you, Mark. I think a lot of folks have become professional pundits now, and they're no longer practicing the law. They've just been brought on one side or the other to comment. And I think they lose a little of their integrity because you are involved with the law on a daily basis, and then you're asked to comment about it. But there's a grounding because you're involved with it on a daily basis. If you weren't involved with it on a daily basis, and then I just was asking you to comment on it, I feel the reason we get a lot of these opinions that seem to be drifting further and further away from the nuts and the bolts of what goes on inside a courtroom is because a lot of these people haven't been in a courtroom in a while. They're just actual spokespeople for whatever station gives them a platform. Thoughts?
You know, it's so interesting you say that because yesterday we had a which would have been Thursday, we had a hearing, a federal court hearing that I did by Zoom because we did all the waivers and spent about, a good chunk of time, seemed like a couple hours, making arguments, the judge coming back, a judge who I've known for many, many years in the Central District, who I have an enormous amount of respect for, but I won't call him out right now. But it was just interesting his view, because it was a sentencing, and he was talking about the two systems of justice, and he was talking about the deterrent effect and rehabilitation and the preciousness of American naturalized citizenship and things. And, you know, I was thinking yesterday, wow, I wish Adam could watch this, but I'd get this barred if I taped it. And they announced that at the beginning. But it's interesting to see what really happens in day to day in a courtroom with real judges who adhere to the law and adhere to and have a reverence for the law. And compared to some of these clowns, for lack of a better term, who get up and comment and you just say, have you been in a courtroom? Have you actually had a client's life in your hands? Have you ever, what is it you do that gives you the ability to pontificate where there is no resemblance whatsoever to reality? You've become a cheerleader for one side or the other, as opposed to just trying to communicate how the system really works.
A good comment to go out on. Let me tell you, we have a comment from Gary as well I want to get to. First 30 seconds for Geico. Do you own, do you rent your home? Well, you do one or the other, and then you have your automotive policy. So, good news. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your automotive policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. You just go to Geico, get a quote, see just how much you could save when you get your bundle going at Geico. That is geico.com. Gary.
Yeah, just real quick, I wanted to let all the listeners know, if you want to follow Harmeet on Twitter, her Twitter handle is a little unusual. It's at PNJABAN. So go follow her there for her legal insights.
All right. May 7th and 8th, Appleton, Wisconsin, Skyline Comedy Club. Me coming up May 22nd, Los Angeles. Jam in the Van. We're doing a live pod there. Go to amcroll.com for all the live shows, and you can check out our Pluto TV channel at 585. You can check out our chassis channel there. What do you got, Mark?
Get down to V Palm Springs, Gigi's for brunch this weekend. Elixir for out by the pool, Casa Tropicana in San Clemente. The weather's great. Prova, if you're in New York, stop by GCT, Grand Central, or Moxie Hotel in Times Square. And if you come equipped with your own knives, come down to Engine Company 28 or 10E and run into the preacher or Dr. Alien.
So until next time, Adam Carolla for Mark Garriga saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all-new episode. This is Corolla Digital.
Well, do you own, do you rent your home? Probably do one or the other. And then you got your automotive policy. How about you bundle them up at Geico? Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners and renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing because you got so much to do already. So go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save when you get your bundle on with Geico. That is geico.com.